2018. This is The Better Life. I am your host, Timothy Lawson. Just going to jump right into it. Got a little bit of a trip report, or maybe a lack of a trip to report. I went to MGM National Harbor last night, as I do, and I was there for the $20,000 Baccarat tournament that was going on. I bought in at the main cage a couple weeks ago, and I was on my way to MGM, and I was in an Uber, and we hit really bad traffic. I mean, from my place to MGM is about 10 minutes, and I think it took me about 25 to get there, and I was already kind of running late when I was on my way. And I called them to see if that would affect my ability to participate, like if I showed up a little bit after the official start. And then the lady who I talked to, someone in table games, and they believed that when I got there, so long as I was there while there was still a heat to go or a round to go, that that I could get in. So I get there. I ended up getting there sooner than I thought. I think I got there about 5:45. It was supposed to start at 6. So I'm in line by 5:50. I'm in line at where the tournament's being taking place, and they're getting ready to start round one, and I'm probably two or three people back from the counter to register when they make the announcement that the tournament is full, and I held up my buy-in, and she was like, "Oh, well, we can have that refunded for you." And I was a little confused. And this is the first, and I've only done a few tournaments, so and I've never like encountered this or never really thought about this, because I have never been late like this before. But the buy-in isn't a registration; it's merely proof that I've paid the fee to buy in, and then you need to then register. And where I was confused is I thought the whole point of buying in early was to sort of lock in a spot. Apparently, that's not the case. Apparently, the only advantage to buying in early is to then have your buy-in receipts ready. I guess so. You skip a step on the day of, right? So anybody, you know, so even minutes before registration starts, someone can walk it buy in and go over to register. Needless to say, I didn't participate in the Baccarat tournament. I was disappointed, but I did get refunded. And I was not only disappointed that I didn't get to. I was looking forward to it. I was looking forward to being in a tournament. It's the first time I was going to do a Baccarat tournament. And so I walked around. I wasn't feeling craps. The blackjack table that I like to play, the only one that was cheap enough for me to warrant playing, was full. And with how busy it was, I knew there was, like, sitting around waiting wasn't going to be an option. So I left, and I came home, and that was it. That was that's my trip report. So not as exciting as I was hoping it was gonna be. I was hoping to bring some insights and experience on Baccarat tournament to today's show, but maybe next time. I think I've seen them do the Baccarat tournaments monthly, so I'm optimistic that we may get another opportunity in April. Tonight, probably as many of you are, maybe even before some of you listen to this, I will be in a blackjack tournament that I have also bought in for. Now I know to get there closer to registration opening versus and not miss my spot here. But I feel better about the blackjack tournament, mostly, if anything, just because I've more experience not only in the game, but I've actually done blackjack tournaments before. The payout isn't as sexy, but I think it's a $5,000 grand prize for first place, and then promotional chips after that. And then everybody that is in the final table of each of the spring series that they're doing, so it's four total tournaments, each final table will make it to the winner takes all finale on April 10th. So looking forward to that. I will bring a full trip report and insights on my experience next week for the blackjack tournament that I'll be in today. Tankapalooza. Some people have heard me talk about it here on the show. Some people have seen me post about it on my Patreon, patreon.com/thebetterlife. I've been tweeting about it as well. Tankapalooza is this phenomenon of NBA teams, or seven of them, NBA teams that are in the interest of losing. If you play it right and you're disciplined and you pick the right spots, it can be very profitable because you're not only betting on a team to win that is looking to win, but you're also betting against a team who is interested in losing. So it's a good situation to be in as a bettor. Someone did note on Twitter that they may have not quite understood exactly what was happening or what the approach is. So just a quick update, and there's only a couple more weeks where this applies, because next year the NBA is changing the percentage amount that the last place team will get in the draft lottery. And that is why people are tanking right now, is because they get 25% of the draft lottery goes to the last team. And so it is in their interest to get last in the standings and get that positioning in next year, in the upcoming draft. So seven teams, and of course I never had them right in front of me when I need to reference them, but Bulls, Kings, Suns, Mavericks, Grizzlies, and the Hawks, I believe. Maybe Orlando? Is that seven or is that eight? Anyways, those teams are interested in losing, and I posted about it of a Twitter thread in which I talked about it from a couple of days ago. When those teams are on the road and they're playing a team that is still playing for playoff position, right? And that's key now, right? So, some teams aren't in the playoffs, but have no, they're eliminated from the playoffs, but they have no reason to tank or win, right? So you don't want to back those teams. So the most recent example, Minnesota was hosting Memphis. Minnesota was the play. Now, unfortunately, Minnesota decided to play super poorly in the last quarter of their match against the Grizzlies and messed around and let the Grizzlies win. And so this isn't foolproof, right? So no, if you decide to ride this wave of Tankapalooza, do not over bet. And I know taking the money line on teams that are heavy favorites to fade a tanking team is intimidating because you're laying a lot of money. I suggest finding another play that you like, or if there's multiple tanking teams in a night, to fade them all in a money line parlay, but still do it modestly. Because the players are not the ones tanking. It's the coaches and the decision makers inside the organization that are deciding, that are telling Devin Booker that he's not playing a certain night. Devin Booker, he plays for the Suns, should he be on the court, he will be playing to win. And he is one of the Suns' better players, which is why coaches, take him off the lineup, and they sort of shrug their shoulders like, oh, it's good for the team, he needs his rest or whatever it may be. No, they're removing him to increase their odds of losing. So if you have any questions about that, you can hit me up on Twitter at The Better Life. If you want to follow more of what I'm doing with that in the coming weeks, you can go on Patreon, patreon.com/thebetterlife. All Patreon, doesn't matter what level, how much you're pledging, you'll see those posts as they come through. Even if you want to follow it, if you want to bet it, whatever it may be, that's where a lot of that information is going to be posted. All right, on to today's interview. It is with professional sports bettor Bill Krakenberger. Bill Krakenberger, I became aware of him through my friend Gil, who hosts a numbers game. Bill was on a numbers game multiple times throughout the NFL season. In fact, he was on nearly each Thursday for a discussion of the NFL slate for each week. He is full of insight. He is entertaining, and he likes helping other bettors out, other people out. So when I first started this show, or before I started it, I forced myself to make a list of 15 to 20 people that I could potentially have on to make sure that I had, that there was a pool of people to start with. And Bill was one of the first people I wrote down. Super excited that he was willing to take time out of his day to join us. We're going to talk about how he got introduced to betting. We're going to talk about sports betting legalization and how he feels about that. And then we have a new Bet Your Life on It question that Bill will be the first to answer. Enjoy. Bill Krakenberger, professional sports bettor. Sir, we'll start where we start each one of these episodes, and that is, you know, where your introduction to gambling. So not maybe necessarily when you started betting, but like when you first were exposed to gambling. Do you remember when that was?
Sure. I grew up an East Coast kid, in a my mother's Italian. My father's family, even there, you know, there were gambling families. It's a way of life for a lot of people back east. When Thanksgiving night was over and all the kids would go to bed, the adults would break out and the men would play pinochle, the ladies would play, you know, a different games, like poker, continental, bridge, whatever. There was always a gamble to it, though. There was always a risk to it. There was some money in the game. Nothing big. They played for dollars, but in the 70s and stuff, that was, you know, it was big money. It wasn't a cutthroat game, but that was just a way of life. In the town I grew up in, everyone gambled. I mean, we pitched quarters behind the post office. We flipped quarters in our wood shop class in high school. I mean, it was just a way of life. When you grew up on the East Coast and you grew up around like in New Jersey, where I went to high school, and you know, there's racetracks and lottery, and it's in your face. So you have to grow up with gambling. That's just the way it is. You know. So.
Yeah. So you mentioned some of the bets you were making growing up as a kid, and but do you remember when you? So when did you finally get into sports betting?
I've been betting sports since I was literally 9 years old. I grew up in a boardwalk town. Everyone, and I worked on the boardwalk as a kid. You know, it's a blue collar Irish Italian town. Everyone gambled. I'm telling you, the games of chance on the boardwalk at nighttime would become like the old Italian feast in New York. You can now the wheels become money wheels. So it was in my blood. But I was a sucker like everybody else until I was shown the right side of things, and now I wanted to be on that side. I was always looking for an edge. I was looking for an edge at a very young age, though. I was looking for an edge when I turned 13, 14 years old. I was an avid reader back then, which amazingly, because of my attention deficit disorder now, it's very, very difficult for me to read a book. I haven't read a book in years. If I go on to read the second or third paragraph, it doesn't flow because the first paragraph becomes non-existent in my brain. But I absolutely became aware of blackjack and card counting, and there was a couple books out then, and this is like 1985 83 82.
Yeah, so Beat the Dealer would have been out by
yes,
then.
Yes, Beat the Dealer was out. Yes, yeah. Yes, he's still a genius, multi-millionaire from stock market hedge funds and stuff. But yes, Beat the Dealer was out. Wow, most people don't even know what Beat the Dealer is. So if I say it, most people won't even know. So you're definitely well schooled in gaming and gambling.
Yes, that was the drive behind starting the show. As I was like, man, I am so into this stuff. Like it was silly to not do this. So
Beat the Dealer. Edward Thorpe's book, right? His book was like the first thing the casino seen is that, wow, you really could beat this. But so we used to play blackjack, head to head blackjack, and they would deal to the bottom, where I definitely had an edge. So I kind of learned edge of blackjack at a young age, not so much sports betting, because but as far as, you know, I'm 13, 14, 15 years old, there wasn't, even though the computer group was out there betting then, made a lot of money back then. I'm in Monmouth County, New Jersey, growing up, And at Monmouth University, they're developing the computer program to beat sports betting. It's so freaky. I mean, I had nothing to do with it. Just a coincidence that I'm there, and that's where Michael Kent's program was developed. That Billy Walters and Doc Midland and stuff, took over and had. So, but yes, I was into some blackjack stuff, and yes, I had some edges in poker. And we played poker a lot as teens. I was more interested in gambling than school. It's real simple. But however, I was still that sucker. I still had the mentality where I overbet, maybe took bad beats and chased my money. Thank God that happened, because you learn from that stuff and you really see other people. Yes, for sure. I went broke tons when I was a kid. But think about it. I'm only 15 years old. I should be broke. I'm a kid.
Yeah,
didn't matter. I was always in money. I worked. I hustled stands in the boardwalk. I just worked my whole life. There was no, not even the family I grew up in was a very hardworking family. But we had no money for college. But then again, thank God we had no money for college. I would not be where I was today if I went to college. Trust me.
Yeah, you hear a lot of serious gamblers that when they're older. Say that part of the reason why they're able to be successful, or at least limit their loss, is because they had early ruin. And that, you see, I think early on, if you have early success, it takes much longer to realize the realities of, you know, what you're risking in house edge and stuff like that. But if you go ruin early on enough, you sort of, I think you quickly adjust and find a new approach to limit that. And I think it works long term, definitely works in the bettor's favor.
Well, you have to know that there's more than a luck factor to success. And at a young age, it's hard to determine that. So it's just, you almost think now, looking back at it, it was just randomness. I'd have to find someone, and I did in life, by the way, someone to show you the path, someone that's more schooled, someone that's more mature. And sure enough, I did. Throughout my late teens into my early 20s, I actually found someone that actually showed me that, hey, you live here? Well, in Philadelphia and New York, you can have two different lines on games because of the markets, of the geographical areas, and the fan base. So there's such a thing as middling and scalping. This is literally 1989. This is, you know, almost 30 years ago. So that's my first initial bankroll was made from scalping and middling. And into the 90s, when the first offshore sports books came up, in Australia, actually, people don't realize that. They think they were always in Costa Rica and stuff. Actually, absolutely not. Costa Rica came later. The original ones were actually in England. I bet Gary Bowman's, which was a really big shop back in the early 90s, the late 90s, Bowman's International. There was plenty of shops in Australia, and there was shops in places like I'm trying to think where ESB, English sports betting, was a early shop in my in one of the islands, but then in Margarita, and then they actually went over and opened up these places in Costa Rica, where Chris, Costa Rican International Sports, was located. So, but in order to get these shops, I had to meet this person, and I met him by chance in Atlantic City at a blackjack machine. A friend of mine called me and said that, hey, there's some machines that are in Atlantic City that are very profitable, and they're only a dollar a spin, but it's a profitable machine to play. And I went to Atlantic City. I found this bank. It was at the Golden Nugget, and I found this bank of machines. And by chance, I sat down next to this guy, 6'5", glasses, very intelligent, very methodical. The way he put the coins in, at the time there was you would actually feed coins
right
to the machine. There was hoppers with coins. It wasn't tickets in and tickets out. So by meeting him by chance, he changed my life. He's the one that showed me advantage sports betting. Him and I became partners the next decade. It's amazing, really, by chance, sitting down in the machine that I would – I already had the mentality of being an advantage. The machine I was playing was a blackjack machine with great early surrender, which was a very profitable situation. So by sitting down at that machine, meeting this gentleman, he's the one that showed me some advantage sports betting and the offshore sports books. The first ones being that I bet was, like I said, it was in Perth, Australia and England. And we were just middling at scout. I came out to Vegas, and for every tournament back then, you would get 2-3 point middles on games. It was was amazing. It was really amazing. And that's how I built up a bankroll, taking minimal risk, laying 2, taking 4.5. And that's how I built up an initial bankroll, but also became I met some people in the industry. I used to write for the RX.com, which was Ken Weitzner's site. I used to write for that in the late 90s, early 2000s. And he made some introductions to me to some people. And I wind up meeting some of the sharpest people in the world and was taken under their wings. And it's all about the connections and knowing who you know and being trusted.
Bettors now are skeptical of using offshore places, right? And this is 2018, and people are worried about getting their money in, getting their money out, the legalities, the liabilities, stuff like that. I mean, how was that in the 90s? How did you feel?
How was it? It was the greatest. You would send money offshore. They'd give you 25-50% bonuses on your money. Of course there was laydowns. Of course there was places like Aces Gold Sports Market, and there was a place in Antigua. Eddie Hadid screwed everybody. There was of course they had these. You have to take a chance. I started out with $1,000. I sent $500 to 2 offshore places. And then at the time they were like literally 100% bonuses. So you would send $500 to a book, they start you out with $1,000. They didn't even have rollover requirements that they have now. So you would literally bet a game or two, and you could get your money back if you want. And they give you your bonus money. I remember Spiro from thegreek.com, when they used to book in the U.S., they bought a book called Bet Jamaica. And so they bought a place called Bet Jamaica, which a lot of these big companies like Chris and Olympic and stuff, they bought a lot of these smaller books. And you would literally send over your money from the bet – the Greek account to Bet Jamaica, and he gave you a 50% bonus. So if I sent over 10 grand, my account's now 15,000. I made 5 grand doing nothing. That's an actual fact too. That really happens. And it just always shocked me how, I don't want to say dumb, because they're looking for market. It's a marketing angle, but you can't give Bill Krakenberger a marketing angle with a 50% edge. It's impossible. I'm going to win anyway, naturally. But now I'm going to take that bonus and also win. So there was a lot of bonus. It's called bonus whoring, I guess. But, I mean, I did play. I wasn't really a guy to pull things in and out. It was very tough to pull things in and out. And net teller was a big thing when they came about in 2000 to do some transfers and stuff. But – you know, the bonus whoring, the bonus part was great back then. And I had information that was, you know, some of the best information in the world, still is. So,
yeah. So, since starting, let me back up. You know, I named the show The Better Life, right? I chose the term better to be the focal point of the title of the show because I knew I was going to have recreational gamblers on, sports bettors, and poker players. And poker players, obviously, you know, they look at their game as a game of skill, and there's gambling obviously involved, but a lot of people don't consider it gambling. Recreational gamblers, definitely gambling. Even when you have an edge, there's a little more gamble to it. And I do remember on a numbers game with Gail Alexander one time, you saying that you don't actually have a whole lot of gamble in you, and that in that it's more, it's just, it's betting is the process. You know, between becoming a professional bettor and now, do you do anything that's gambling? Can we find you at a craps table? Do you still enter poker? No. Do you do any of that?
No. I mean, if my buddy's coming to town, and I had 8 guys in town this weekend. And I had like 6 rooms all over the city. It was kind of crazy. But I have really, really good connections for rooms. So I had 6 rooms over the weekend. Now, they gambled on some things this weekend. And I honestly could say I didn't even put my dollar. I mean, once in a while, I'll buy in for $100 at a craps table or something. But if you do see me at a craps table or at any table, there's an edge to it. Because betting any serious money, because I'll go into a casino and – I'll actually go for a promotion where they say, if you play 4 hours, and you give us $1,000 average bet, we'll give you $5,000 just to come in. And that's happened. That's happened to me. I have many opportunities like that where I could put, you know, if I have a credit line or something, they'll give you 5% of your credit line in promo chips with a deal. And that I'll absolutely do. I'll look for a slow-moving crap table or a slow-moving table, roulette table or something where I can gain a lot of Theo and make it look like I'm gambling more than I am. That, does that make any sense? It's probably even giving away more information than I should, but it's really hard for me not to tell the truth. So I just, you're asking, I'm telling.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that. And I think most of the people that listen to this show also listen to shows like Gambling with an Edge and stuff like that, where they talk about advantage play. And part of advantage play is going to a table or a game that obviously has a house edge, but then overcoming that house edge with promotions and stuff like that. So I think that that concept is understood. One question I always love to ask professional bettors is, when did you realize you were good enough to rely on betting as a primary income?
Late 90s, probably 97, 98.
And what was it? Was it a winning percentage that got you there? Was it reaching a certain mark in your bankroll? What threshold did you cross to come to that understanding?
When the internet came of age and these books started giving out these bonuses and you can middle and scalp numbers, and I kind of knew because of the people I was starting to meet, and I'm laying 132 on a baseball game, and after I bet it and after the group bets it, it goes to 148. Well, I know I could take back 138 on the other side and lock up 6 cents. I knew this was something that I could make money at long term as long as everybody paid.
So I was at the Supreme Court hearing in December when the Supreme Court was hearing from New Jersey on why PASPA should be repealed and sports betting be made legal. Does the legalization of sports betting, and I came out of the Supreme Court feeling like it was in New Jersey's favor. For professional bettors like yourself, does nationwide legal sports betting benefit you, or
not,
does
not at all? Not at all. Matter of fact, I'm against. I did an episode of Vice on HBO recently, and I gave out my opinion that they were shocked. The other panel, the other guests all said, "Oh yeah, we want legalized sports betting." I actually don't. It doesn't matter to me. It's the same exact companies that are here in Nevada, William Hill, Stations, well, not Stations, but companies like that, Caesars, Boyd. It's these same exact companies that are going to be taking over the gambling for these individual markets like Atlantic City. Unless there be other sports books involved, like the Revel and the Hard Rock are opening now in Atlantic City, I don't know who their choice would be, but probably William Hill. And William Hill throws, as you know, I'm sure, and I'm a proponent of mentioning it all the time, William Hill throws everybody out, including me. Anyone that wins, anyone that has a pulse, squares, anybody. So they throw people out constantly. It's the CEO of the company. It's probably not Nick Bogdanovich, who's their head line maker. I think Nick would actually want to know what sharp guys are on so he can adjust or over-adjust his line. But that's not William Hill, United States, anyway. The U.S. brand of William Hill, that's not their philosophy, and it probably comes from the CEO directly. That's what I heard. I heard he goes to Delaware Park and throws people out constantly that win. So it's just – it's amazing, actually. It's actually shocking that – so anyway, I'm not going to go off on a tangent there. People know,
no worries.
And that's it. No, they know.
Yeah.
If you're betting at William Hill long-term, you're a sucker. So but it bothers me when these gaming writers and these people that write on gaming talk about, oh, William Hill just took a $100,000 bet. Okay, yeah, but – you know, big deal. They took a $100,000 bet on something they have a lot of time to move, a major sport, the NFL Super Bowl, or a major game, a Final Four game. You know, yeah, maybe they'll take that stuff, but they're not taking anything that from a guy that bets $500 a game that moves the line half a point. So anyway, so it's going to be these same companies in the jurisdictions, and it doesn't do anything for me because – it's not – there isn't any new blood in the market, so it wouldn't do me any good. And then my point on Vice was Do you think – I grew up in Jersey. Do you think a kid in Jersey needs another vice at 21 years old? I mean, there's not only is there the peer pressures and social media pressures and gambling is in your face. Casinos, horses, lottery, home games. It's an aggressive East Coast place anyway. Do you think they need sports betting it's only going to hurt more people. I mean, it is. So
yeah.
That's a really an unselfish act, me saying that, but that's just the way I feel. I hope they don't get it, but they will. I hear Jersey's getting it from some big people, so some CEOs of companies. I am really friendly with some guys that are high up. I'm friends with a couple GMs of casinos, and I'm friends with a couple presidents and CEOs of casinos. So I hear they're getting it in Jersey.
I feel the exact same way as you do as far as giving people another vice. I obviously am in favor of legalized sports betting because I live in Maryland, and it's even if New Jersey got it, it would be a pain in the butt to go up there just to bet.
Sure.
You know, and so I would like to see it go to state rights, and I would like there to be a shop that I can go to locally, but I want that because I know I can enjoy it. I fear for what happens when half the nation can just begin wagering money. And not to say that, of course, and we can get this argument of like, well, people are doing it already anyways, but a lot of people don't do drugs because it's illegal, right? And so, and then when you legalize them, like now they have the opportunity to legally do them, whether they do it responsibly or not, we don't know. And so I think the same thing comes with gambling. Yeah, there are people doing it, but they're doing it knowing that there's there's a liability for them doing it. As soon as you make it legal, I think you open up the opportunity for more people just having another vice to have to deal with. If it were to get legalized, and this is just hypothetical, and I'm just curious on your thoughts as someone who obviously wants to get the best of the number and get the best of your money down, if it does get legalized and there was more blood in the market and you could get better lines available in another state, would you move to take advantage of them?
No. This is my home. Las Vegas is the weather's probably as I get older, I hate cold weather, even though I grew up in that.
Yeah.
But the weather is great here. I just have some really good things going on here that there's so many reasons why. Even though I'm kind of down on Vegas a little bit all the time. When I was on ESPN, I probably shouldn't even have mentioned that, but I kind of mentioned that I shouldn't have. But, the image it gives to itself, come here and just go crazy, act like you never act home. It's kind of, I don't know. I'm very old school. I don't drink, smoke, or do drugs, so I'm very old school to begin with. I literally haven't been drunk since high school once, like 10th grade, so 30 years. People come here and they act like I said, like they never would back home. They just do so many crazy things, and the town promotes it. Look at the image of the town. What happens is here stays here. I mean, It's kind of crazy, but I do like it here for other reasons. I like it for the legalities of sports betting. I do bet on the sports betting apps. I do go to the casinos. I get a lot of promotions. I have some friends that come into town and visit me here. Everyone likes to come to Vegas. I wouldn't leave because the casinos only take so much money anyway. So if one or two more new outs come into the business, new places to bet, it wouldn't make it feasible for me to leave, especially go back east again. I do go back east. I do go back and forth sometimes. I still have family there, so I love going to Jersey, the Jersey Shore in the summer. I spend a lot of time at Ocean City and down the shore. I even play some poker, which I never play. It's funny. I never play poker in Las Vegas ever, but I will in the summertime. I'll go with my friends. I'll go to Borgata and play some, 40-80 limit hold'em or something just to, have some fun. But that's about it.
Yeah. So what about Vegas? You mentioned like you like the weather and you take advantage of promotions, but is there anything about Vegas that excites you anymore?
Well, we have. I don't know if you ever see me. I love food, so I do go. We have restaurants here that are. This last night at dinner, I went to a place at the Gold Coast called Ping Pang Pong, which is their like probably the best Chinese restaurant in town. So we were talking about my friends and I, there's eight of us, and they're all from Philly and New York, and we're talking, and one of them mentions how Vegas probably has the best food. It really does. I mean, New York City has great food, but probably double the price. And New York, I mean, Vegas has great food, great opportunities for different types of food. We have a Chinatown here that when I first moved to town was nothing like it is now. We have some certain areas here where every casino has top name chefs now. I love that. How about the shows? I mean, I'm a classic rock fan. Love classic rock. I see the best shows in the world here. I mean, I've seen the Stones three times here in the first row. I mean, I have great contacts for tickets. So I love going to concerts. I love going to the joint at the Hard Rock. I've seen everyone there. I mean, you can't name there's so many bands that I just seen the Who there recently. Just everyone, Journey, Scorpions. I mean, Roger Waters was just here. You know, you get the greatest shows. Robert Plant, Led Zeppelin was just here. You know, he was just here. So I love going to concerts. And listen, it's a great thing. I'm going to see U2 next month when they're here, 2 months from now. I don't have to go. I can go steps from I live in a high rise at City Center, so I go steps from. You literally go outside and walk to the venue. It's unbelievable. Yeah. It's unbelievable. Where else can I do that? I can never, you know, just do something like that anywhere else that I could think of. I live around the Strip. I mean, it's great. So, yeah.
Is football your busiest time of the year?
Crossover sports, football, basketball.
Yeah.
So when they're both going together at the end of football season and when college basketball starting up November, December, that's probably the busiest.
What is the most obscure, I guess, or what's the oddest sport that you look to bet either on a regular basis or occasionally?
WNBA golf matchups.
WNBA, I like to hear that.
Yeah, WNBA, yeah. and that's it's hard to get down now. It was great in the beginning, though. In the beginning, it was absolutely great, and you know the people I'm involved with and myself, we control the market. I control the market in anything. You could name any game right now on the college basketball schedule, even though it's you know, especially like today's NIB or these smaller conferences. You can name any game, and I'll move it a point. Literally, with a couple bets, the whole entire world will move. That's nothing to be proud of. Actually, I wish they didn't move, but. You know, we control the market, so I kind of control the market in a lot of things, I bet. Now, I'm not the only one out there. There's some great syndicate groups out there that are, you know, just not better than me.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a good respect, though. It's a mutual respect. You know, I know what I'm allowed to bet in the casinos, and you know, when I bet them, you know, they move the line or overmove the line. So, that's larger sports. I'm saying smaller sports like we started the conversation, the WNBA, very tough to get down on like it was in the beginning. They thought they were all going to put up lines in Vegas on it and everyone was going to be fine, but they didn't know we have much, much, much better information than the originating line maker comes up with.
Yeah, so I follow women's soccer, and the last time I went out to Vegas, I asked Chris Andrews if he'd give me a line, and he had his soccer guy give me a line. And even that, I was like, they told me what it was, and I was like, oh, I wish I lived here and could take advantage. I was like, it was such a weak line, and again, just because who has information on professional women's soccer, right?
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
I can see that. A game we like to play, Bill, is Bet Your Life on It. I'm going to give you a scenario. You're going to pick a side. You're going to bet your life on it. Should you win this bet? Of course, this is hypothetical. Should you win this bet, you win an entire second lifetime. But if you were to lose, your current life would be no more as soon as the event concluded. Mike Tyson or Ali in their prime, each in their prime, who wins that bout?
Ali.
Yeah.
I mean, there would never be a bet that I would bet. If you could tell me, just to let you know on this further hit on this question, there wouldn't be a bet in my life where you could say, hey, you have a 90% chance of winning this. Flip this coin, but however, 9 out of 10 times you're going to win it, but bet your whole bankroll on it. At this time in my life, I wouldn't.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want to lose. I wouldn't do it. So, But as far as this bet goes, and I love boxing. I don't know. One of my best friends is Teddy Alice. I don't know if you know that or not. But
yeah,
I love boxing, and not just because I'm a little skewed against Tyson because of Teddy. I think Ali was one of the greatest fighters of all time. Not the greatest, by the way, but one of the greatest of all time. And when you watch these old fights, these old school fights, when you see one of the greatest testaments of Muhammad Ali is the fight where he fought George Foreman, and Foreman was the new up-and-coming bulldog, just like Tyson would be. And Foreman beat the crap out of him for, I don't know, 13 rounds, I think it was. And then Ali came back in the 13th and beat him. It was unbelievable. To see that fight is the best. And sometimes it's on ESPN Classics. It's on there. It's just a testament of who the man was. And it was just great there. When there was 60,000 people in attendance and Ali put him down, it was just unbelievable that he came back and won that fight. And to see that is exactly how I think it would be, something like that with Tyson, but a shorter span. Tyson would tire himself out faster than Foreman did, because of just like his performance with Buster Douglas. So Ali for sure.
I phrase the question the way that I do to get the best answer out of someone. I want people to really think about it, to think of like how if everything was on the line, which way would you actually go with it?
Anyone that answers Tyson would probably be younger, or younger mindset, or not know a lot about the classic history of boxing, actually, because if you know Ali and the way he fought and you know, the way he danced around and he fought some of these guys that were big bulldogs. I mean, he fought a guy named Chuck Wepner, Bayonne Bleeder, that knocked him down, you know, big tough guy. So it's not uncommon for someone young or someone that's not as schooled probably right away to say Mike Tyson, because he's still relevant in our society today.
Yeah.
So, but Ali is clearly the winner.
Are you getting beeps over there? You getting plays down? Someone telling you to get a play down?
No, not at all. That's fine.
You know, for my day job, I actually got to go up to Brooklyn to Gleason's gym.
Love it. Been there a million times. Absolutely great spot.
Yep.
You're walking in the history of something that's just unbelievable. So
yeah, and it was cool to talk to the owner and talk to, because he remembers, you know, he remembers
Neil. Neil, is that the guy? Neil?
Bruce. Bruce.
Oh,
is
Bruce
the,
Silverglade. Bruce yep. Silverglade. Yes, yep. I remember him. Yeah.
Yeah, he was good talking. Guy. Yeah, he was talking about Cassius Clay coming into his gym, which was
That's great, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, it's amazing. Bill, I really appreciate your time, man. When I first conceptualized the show, and I made myself write down 15 people that I could think of that I'd want to have on, and you made the list quickly, and I'm glad that you were able to take the time to chat with me and my audience.
That's really nice of you. That makes me feel good, and that makes it worth it for me too, because I love to help people and let them know about what I did, and hopefully they could learn from some of the things I've done. And I really appreciate your time and your candor too, so that's nice. And anytime you need me on or anytime you need anything, just let me know.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm sure sometime in the future we'll bring you back on and talk. Maybe when sports betting gets legalized, we can get your thoughts on the developments.
Sure, no problem at all.
Bill's great. Definitely going to try to see if he'll come back later this year. Maybe sometime between a Supreme Court decision and the beginning of NFL season, to sort of get his perspective on where the industry is at that point. Because if we get a Supreme Court decision on sports betting as late as June, that pretty much means that books and casinos are going to have just 2 or 3 months to get some sort of operation up and going to start taking wagers by the beginning of NFL season. Now, I know a lot of states are already positioning themselves to be able to do that. New Jersey, no doubt, will have, and there's some places in New Jersey that are boasting being able to take wagers within weeks. Other states are probably going to take a little bit longer, but regardless of sort of where they are now, I promise you that once a decision is made, every state that is looking to legalize sports betting within their states and to provide a scheme for it, they're going to be looking to do so before the NFL season, so because that's where a lot of their money is going to come from. So excited to see how all of that turns out, and we'll definitely have get people on between that decision and the NFL season to sort of hear about the evolution, hear about what's going on. Maybe we can even get someone who's in the industry to join us. And by in the industry, I mean like a bookmaker or something like that. That wraps up episode 6. Hard to believe it's only been 6. You all make me feel so welcome here. I feel like I've been around for a while, but we're just 6 episodes in. Got a lot of great interviews still to come. Got some in the bag already, and got some other people interested. And it's fun to put these out. I'm glad that everybody's enjoying it. You can find us on Twitter at TheBetterLife. Patreon.com/TheBetterLife is where you can support the show. And iTunes and Stitcher, you can find us to subscribe. Please leave a rating and review if you're enjoying the show. Or if you're not enjoying the show, be honest about that too, so we can reach a broader audience. So good night. Good luck.